am not ashamed of the gospel, and I hope you aren't either. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. And we want to welcome you today to Jesus Made Me Kosher. Jesus Made Me Kosher, sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael. We're your friendly neighborhood Messianic Synagogue in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. And we would love to hear from you. If you are a regular listener to Jesus Made Me Kosher, we'd love to get feedback from you and see how you're enjoying the show. We naturally hope that it will be a blessing to you. And I'm convinced that today's program will be a blessing to you. Rabbi Glenn in today, and we're coming to you live from the spacious and congenial studios of Faith Talk 1500. And today we have the joy of speaking with somebody that I've not met in person, I don't think, but already a friend because she's a dear sister in the Lord. Her name is Sarah Asher. She is leading, as of yesterday, she is leading the Jews for Jesus Summer Witnessing Campaign in New York City, the largest city with a population of Jewish people outside of Israel, anywhere in the world, more Jewish people in New York. And Sarah is leading this annual fantastic and, I should say, difficult outreach in New York City. And Sarah, we want to welcome you to Jesus Made Me Kosher with just a little bit of hometown music for you.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, Sarah, you were born and raised in a Jewish believing family, right? In St. Louis?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, my story begins actually with my parents. They heard a Christ in the Passover presentation, and that presentation wasn't exactly when they put their faith and trust in Jesus, but it definitely sparked some interest. And so I had the privilege of growing up in a home where we celebrated Passover and Easter and Christmas and Hanukkah, and I heard about Jesus from a young age.
Now,
very blessed.
Now your parents obviously took the admonition from the Lord, be fruitful and multiply, seriously, didn't they?
A little bit, yeah. I have 10 younger brothers and sisters, so we definitely have a lively household.
Wow, you're the firstborn. You're the boss.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. Okay, so you had the benefit of growing up in a family of believers. By the way, do you know offhand about when your parents heard that Christ in the Passover presentation?
Oh, it was definitely about close to 30 years ago, I would say.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's fantastic. And what a great legacy. And I'm sure they've got a lot of nachas, a lot of pride in the fact that you, their daughter, are following in the Lord and stepping up to leadership even.
It's definitely exciting. And I pray, especially for my younger brothers and sisters also, you know, that they would follow in my parents' example and the example that I hope I'm setting for them.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Well, by the way, folks, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher, Rabbi Glenn in today, and we're interviewing Sarah Asher, who's a Jewish believer in Jesus from the St. Louis area. She has been involved with Jews for Jesus for a couple of years now. Now is actually officially on staff. She has ministered in Israel and Poland and England and here in the U.S. She's in the process of completing her missionary training. She's heading up the Jews for Jesus Summer Witness Campaign, which began yesterday and will go through the month of July. And Sarah, I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the history of the Jews for Jesus Summer Witnessing Campaigns.
Sure, absolutely. Well, the first campaign took place in New York City in the early 70s. And it was a group of young, new Jewish believers in Jesus who were excited about their new relationship with the Jewish Messiah, Jesus. And they wanted their Jewish people to know, they wanted to get people excited, and they wanted to just to raise awareness that Jewish people can believe in Jesus. And so they set out on this adventure for several weeks and had this all-out effort where they were getting on street corners, and just telling people about Jesus one-on-one, you know? And throughout the years, this has become a tradition, and every summer in New York City, we gather Jewish believers from really all over the world, not just the United States, really all over the world, to do exactly that, to get out there and to proclaim Jesus as the Messiah, and really just engage, to interact with our Jewish people, and to ask them who they think Jesus is, and then have the opportunity to share what the scriptures say.
That really is the $64,000 question. It's the one Yeshua himself asked at Caesarea Philippi. Who do you say that the Son of Man is? Who do you say that Jesus is? Well, I had the privilege of serving on a couple of summer witnessing campaigns. Describe for our listeners some of what goes on during these 2 weeks of training, because we don't just throw people out there on the street in New York City without spending some time in training and preparation. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, every soldier needs to go to battle prepared. And so we take 2 weeks, and in Chicago, actually at Moody Bible Institute, we send any of our volunteers there. Actually, I went, it was at least 6 years ago, I think, and it was a wonderful experience. We learned some, different Jewish tenets of faith, so that we could be more specific in the way we could share. We learned how to share our testimony effectively. We practiced role playing, and it was just an opportunity to grow in our faith and in our understanding of the Bible so that we could be more effective in sharing it.
That's great. So 2 weeks of training and preparation in Chicago. And then everybody schleps from Chicago to New York, gets settled in there. And then yesterday was the first day of the summer campaign. So talk to us a little bit about how the first day went.
Sure, absolutely. The first day went amazing. I'm super excited to report that we had lots of interactions, not only with Jewish people, but with many people who were curious about who's this Jesus? What do you mean Jews for Jesus? What does that mean? And so we also had some people that we were able to pray with. And so the most exciting thing that I have to report to you and your listeners is that four people yesterday prayed to receive Jesus with our volunteers on the streets. And so we actually have our missionary staff right now on the phone following up and getting them connected with a solid, healthy church here in the area so that they can take the next step in growing in their faith.
Oh, that's great. So, friends, we've got four new brothers and sisters in the Lord just as a result of these people sacrificing the time, taking 6 weeks during the midst of the summer to endure really a long, hard day of ministry. If I remember correctly, Sarah, the typical schedule is that everybody's up at about 5:15 or something like that in order to 5:30 to get out there and be out there for the morning rush hour, which really is like from 6 to 8, and then nice bite of breakfast, a little chapel service, then right back out for the lunch crowd, and then back and having some lunch, and then a little bit of rest time, maybe a little nap, and then back out there for the afternoon rush hour crowd, and then come back for dinner, and then various kinds of creative evening outreaches. So it really is a full day, isn't it?
It really is a full day from sun up to sundown. Absolutely.
And folks, I would ask your prayers for Sarah as she leads the Jews for Jesus Summer Witnessing Campaign, and for the campaigners. You know, the first week there's a lot of adrenaline. You're just starting out, and the impact is initially being felt. They haven't seen us before, and wow, we're interacting with all these people. The second week, if I remember, you're now in the niche. You've got the routine. It's flowing. People are knowing what to do and where to be. And the third week is the hardest, isn't it? Because you're past the rush of the initial thing. You're now past the flow and starting to feel the wear and the tear of a couple of weeks of that schedule.
Right.
Wow. And then
kind of hits a wall and just says, pushed me so far. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I'm tired of people yelling at me. I just want to sleep. But then comes that last week, And that's the most exciting week, when you can look back and see where God has brought you and how he's been faithful through through the conversations, through the physical exhaustion, and really see how he's worked, and he's worked through you this month through this campaign.
Now, in years past, the back in my day, in years past, the predominant way of outreach during the summer witnessing campaign was broadsiding, handing out these short, very pithy, clever pamphlets that introduced the gospel in a simple, would you like to learn more kind of way. It's not the whole thing. It's basically an invitation to interact. But I would imagine that these days the broadsides themselves are just one of many approaches that I would imagine you guys are using various electronic media. Talk to us a little bit about some of the different ways that you reach out during campaign.
Absolutely. I'm super excited. This year we're trying a couple of different things. Last year we tried a glossy, two-sided, sort of looks like a postcard. On the front is some type of illustration or something catchy, and on the back is a little bit more of a message. That's definitely more along the lines of a broadside, where you just have a short invitation for a conversation. This year, in addition to those postcard invitations to have a conversation, we're also starting something a little bit more new, which is we are going to be using iPads. We developed a survey and made it into an app, an application to download onto an iPod, iPad, excuse me. And we're taking it out to parks, street corners, beaches, and engaging people in conversation that way. So the app is really fun because it's sort of like a game almost. It follows the format basically where the campaigner would ask a person a question, and the way they the person can answer the question is they look at the series of images on the screen on the iPad, and they can choose whichever image they think best answers the question. And it has provided us with lots of opportunities to interact with people. It provides people with an opportunity to kind of evaluate, what do I think? Why would I, how would I answer this question? And it's also fun because it's, like I said, it's kind of like a game. There's pictures. You get to play with an iPad a little bit. So it's been great. It's been great fun.
And,
have been using Facebook to interact with people. We've just begun, but we're attempting to start up with some YouTube. So it's, stay tuned. There's more to come.
Now, as I recall, Jews for Jesus also has a particular shirt that people can scan with their iPhone, and it takes them directly to the Jews for Jesus website.
Absolutely. Yes, we have three shirts this year, actually, where that's possible. In addition, all of our broadsides have QR codes on the back.
That's what they're called, QR codes. Okay, you have to excuse me. I'm an old fuddy-duddy.
I'm just learning myself. It's a whole new set of lingo, right?
It is. Now, so some of the Jews for Jesus missionaries and volunteers who are out there on the street, they're actually doing this with the iPad. And I'm just thinking from my own experiences in years past, every so often there's somebody who comes along and tries to grab the tracts out of your hand. Do you have a way that those iPads are not just going to be ripped out of people's hands?
Sure. Well, I mean, we're teaming up, so it's a little bit more intimidating to come up and try to take something away from two people. So that's one safety measure. We've been experimenting with this, and so far, people have been very respectful. We haven't had any trouble at all.
Well, not to mention stealing a piece of paper out of somebody's hand. Nobody's going to jail for that. But stealing
an
iPad, you could go
an
to jail.
An iPad is a little... There's more of a risk involved if you're going to mess with that.
Sure.
Exactly.
Sure. Well, now, any interesting or inspiring encounters? I know that, as we said earlier, four people prayed to receive Jesus as their Lord and Messiah just on the streets yesterday, just in the one day. Any interesting conversations that were related to you that come to mind that were particularly memorable?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one particular woman that I spoke with because she is excited about, she's actually a Jewish believer in Jesus, and she didn't know that there were other Jewish believers in Jesus in the city. She's actually just recently moved here from the South, and her father is coming to visit this week. And so she's excited because we have some events and things like that lined up for this month. And so she said, well, I would love to bring my dad. Is that okay? Can I bring him? He doesn't know Jesus yet. And so
wow.
I'm particularly excited about this connection, this opportunity to not only encourage this young woman who feels all alone and isolated because she feels like she's the only Jewish person who believes in Jesus, but also to provide her with an opportunity to share with her father. How exciting would that be, right?
That is very exciting, and how encouraging for her in the midst of New York City, this great metropolitan city with millions of people going here and there, and to run into a fellow Jewish believer in Jesus and know that she's not alone. That is so exciting because, you know, most of us, are first generation believers. We're the first ones in our family to become believers in Jesus. My sister Andrea, my older sister, one of my two older sisters, became a believer just a couple of years after I did. But so far, it's just the two of us in the family working on the rest. But yeah, it's difficult. And I really thought I was the only one, 31 years ago in Southern California, when I became a believer in Jesus, I thought I was the only one. So it really was a comfort and encouragement to know that we weren't alone. Well, Sarah, let me ask you just a last thing here. How can people, the listeners to Jesus Made Me Kosher, how can people stay informed on the progress of the campaign? Is there a URL they can go to and kind of stay abreast of it?
Absolutely. Actually, I would encourage your listeners to check out our Facebook page. On Facebook, we're posting pictures. We actually just posted a video, a kind of summary of our first day. For listeners that don't have Facebook, you're welcome to go to our website, www.jewsforjesus.org. We also have Twitter, and so there's many, many ways of getting in touch. But yeah, definitely check out our Facebook page and keep up that way.
That would be great. Now, from what I understand, once you guys finish the campaign in New York, you're going to be deployed to the Los Angeles branch. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm excited about East Coast to West Coast.
Yeah, from the Midwest to the East Coast to the West Coast. For me, it was the opposite, West Coast to the East Coast to the Midwest.
Okay.
But that's great. And I'm just trying to think, is Stan Meyer still heading up the branch in Los Angeles?
He's still part of the branch, and
okay.
Yes, absolutely. I'm excited to be working with Stan. He was actually my very first team leader on a summer witnessing campaign.
Well, Stan and I traveled together on the Liberated Wailing Wall.
Oh, exciting.
And so we've known each other for years, and please give him my greetings. And tell the people in New York that the people in Detroit are praying for them.
Thank you so much. You don't know what an encouragement it is to know that we're not standing alone. We're standing with other believers all across the country who are upholding us in prayer. So thank you. That means so much.
Thanks so much, Sarah. Again, folks, you've been listening to Sarah Asher, who is directing the Jews for Jesus Summer Witnessing Campaign in New York City. And folks, we do want to encourage you to be praying for Sarah and for the Jews for Jesus Summer Witnessing Campaign. You can find them on Facebook. You can also go to jewsforjesus.org and learn more about their ministry. And we certainly encourage you to do that. Well, we're going to move on now, and we have a few more minutes in today's show. And I do want to talk to you about this interesting encounter I had just the other evening with an older Jewish couple in Royal Oak. And in the process of talking to you about it, share with you a couple of myths and misperceptions that people have about Jewish people and see if we can clear a few of them up. I was at the Shell station on Woodward, just a little north of 13 Mile, where all the hot rods and classic cars tend to line up on the weekends, and it's just a lot of fun. An older Jewish couple saw me sitting on my motorcycle, and they saw that the windshield said Rabbi's Ride. They said, "Are you a rabbi?" I said, "By most rabbis, I'm no rabbi, but I do serve as a rabbi, and I'm Jewish, and I do believe that Jesus is the Messiah." So what ensued was a mostly good-natured debate on this, but I have to tell you that this couple was biblically illiterate. And I say this because one of the most common myths that Christians have about Jewish people is this assumption, and it's wrong, that Jewish people really know the Old Testament a lot better than they do. It's not true. The vast majority of Jewish people seldom, if ever, read the Bible. And that was true of this couple as well. They really didn't know the Old Testament at all. They certainly had not been willing to read the New Testament. You know, several years ago, and this is a long time ago, at a city park in Los Angeles, I got into a pickup basketball game with a group of Orthodox Jewish young men who were studying at a nearby yeshiva. These guys were preparing to become rabbis. And after the game, we got to talking, and I shared with them the fact that I'm Jewish and I believe Jesus is the Messiah. They, of course, disagreed. And we got into a good-natured debate, and they argued that if Jesus had been the Messiah, the majority of the Jewish people would have followed him, or at least certainly the majority of the rabbis. And I brought up the fact that the majority almost always can be counted on to do the wrong thing. And as an example, I brought up the golden calf. And out of all 12 tribes of Israel, when Moses said, "Who is going to stand up for Adonai?" only the tribe of Levi, one out of 12, did the right thing. And that when Moses sent the 12 spies into the land, out of those 12, 10 of them chickened out and discouraged everybody else, basically saying, "We'll never make it. We'll never succeed. They're too big for us. There's more of them than us. Their cities have huge walls around them. We don't stand a chance." And only 2 out of 12 were faithful to say, "We by all means should go in and take the land because the Lord has commanded us to do so and he will be with us." And I asked these Orthodox rabbinical students, these guys are going to be the rabbis, "Can you tell me the name of the 2 faithful spies?" And they could not name Joshua and Caleb. Folks, I could go to most Sunday school classes with elementary age kids who could tell you that Joshua and Caleb were the 2 faithful spies. These rabbis in training didn't know this. And it's not as though this is some obscure passage from the Minor Prophets. This is Torah. And if rabbinical students don't know this, trust me, the average Jewish person does not know the Old Testament very well. And I will tell you that this couple that I met in Royal Oak, it was true of them. Now, they were very confident with their assertions about who Jesus was as far as they're concerned, who the prophets were, what the Bible is. And all along, they're giving me all these wrong answers and misinformation. They thought, for example, that Joseph and Mary were boyfriend and girlfriend, and that maybe they were fooling around. They didn't understand first century Israel and these strict customs about betrothal and marriage. They didn't know any of these things. They made excuses about why they didn't believe it was possible for a prophet to predict the future, that it's impossible. I said, "Of course it's impossible physically, but do you believe in the supernatural God who can give human beings this ability?" And this is where they divided. The husband absolutely believes that God is there, that he is all powerful. So he had to concede that, yes, if God is God and he wanted to give somebody knowledge of the future, he could do that. Of course, the husband also questioned the Holocaust and where was God during the Holocaust. But all in all, as I look back on that discussion, they made all these bold assertions based on zero evidence, admitting that they didn't read the Bible, admitting they'd never read the gospel. And I challenged them to intellectual integrity. And I said, you know, if you were in a courtroom and you were being put on a jury panel and you refused to come into the courtroom and hear the case and look at the evidence, but you still wanted to maintain the right to render a verdict, you'd be kicked off that jury. A good juror has to be willing to dispassionately look at the evidence, hear the case, and only then to make a wise and informed judgment. And so that's my challenge to all of you, to be good ambassadors, those of you who know the Lord, and those of you who don't yet believe. We challenge you to go into that courtroom, hear the case, and view the exhibits. Well, folks, Rabbi Glenn, on behalf of Congregation Shema Yisrael, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Shalom, shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.